Support for the WGTD Morning Show comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. JackandDrea.com. Support for the Morning Show also comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers now available at carthage.edu/admissions/transfer.
And it's a high compliment that I really hate to put that down. It's such a great song, and it's sung so well. The song is Breaking Bread. It's from the group Well-Known Strangers from their album Aligned. And the lead singer is one Betsy Aid, the now famous Betsy Aid, thanks to a spectacular performance which she delivered in one of the preliminary rounds of a very popular television music competition show called The Voice. And Betsy Aid has earned fans all across the country thanks to that spectacular singing. And of course, people here in southeastern Wisconsin who know Betsy Aid were especially excited by that performance and excited to see what transpires from here. We're really excited here at WGTD that Betsy Aid has made time in what now is a ferociously busy schedule to join us on the morning show to tell her story of being part of this exciting adventure. And with her is her girlfriend, Chantel Godlewski, who is a nurse and has been a tremendous source of support for Betsy for many, many years, and was actually in Los Angeles with Betsy to witness these events up close and personal. So we're really glad that both of them can be part of the morning show. Betsy Aid, Chantel Godlewski, we welcome you to the morning show.
Hello. Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Great to have you here. Thanks for making time in what I suspect is a very complicated busy schedule for you. First of all, we're going to a little later talk in more kind of careful, concerted fashion about all that happened on the show. But for our listeners who don't know what I'm talking about, there's probably plenty of public radio listeners who are too busy listening to Mozart string quartets to be watching a show called The Voice, but this is still a great story that we want to tell. So explain to our listeners what has happened thus far for you on this show called The Voice, when this occurred and when this was actually on TV screens for people to watch and enjoy.
This has been close to a 7 or 8 month process from the beginning, my first audition and the airing of my episode, which was absolutely thrilling to have that on TV. So my first audition was in June in Chicago. And I went down on a whim, kind of. It was a suggestion from Dino Corrales, who is a part of our management team, FM Music Management. He asked if I'd ever be interested in auditioning, and it was kind of like a why not, what do you got to lose kind of thing. And so I went down. It was very intimate type of audition. Of course, I was very, very nervous. They asked you to be prepared with three songs. One of the songs that I sang, I played the guitar to. It was a Brandi Carlile tune, who's one of my favorite artists ever. The Story was one of the songs that I played. And then I also had my bandmate Joe Adamick from Well-Known Strangers. He came with me and he played the guitar to the song Zombie from the Cranberries. And then they wanted us to prepare a karaoke style tune, and so I sang to a track and sang Alanis Morissette, You Ought to Know, which is one of my favorite karaoke tunes to sing to. So I did that, all three of those songs, went down for an interview, took about a couple hours. They handed me a piece of paper, said, you did as good as you could do. We'll reach out to you telling you what has happened.
Right. And excuse me. And, oh, yeah. And so you, and this was an audition for, in a sense, complete strangers. I mean, you're not singing for anybody well known at this point.
Right.
It's with people associated with the show, and it's not a glitzy place. It's
right.
a kind of simple space.
Yeah, it was just like a tiny studio. They had maybe three people in the room, one that was in charge of the cameras, one that was in charge of, you know, media. They had like two or three computers going back and forth, and then another one that was just kind of watching you. So it was very, very intimate. Nothing fancy, and they had just had one big monitor in front of you, so you had to be on. You kind of had to just turn it on. So I did that, and then after that audition, it was a couple months later that I got word that I made it through that audition, and they flew me out to LA for 3 or 4 days, and they asked me to. They gave me a bunch of almost 600 songs to choose 20 of, and they asked us to rank those, and from that list they would choose one for us to perform out there for the executive callback. So that one, the second round of auditions was an executive callback. So I chose that. They chose one song for me and I chose another. And I performed two while I was out there. And, you know, you do as much as you possibly can to prepare. You know what song, they told us which song they chose for us maybe like 5 days before we got out there. So, and I was very happy with the song they chose. So I get out there, do my few songs, and I was just happy to get through that part of the process because, you know, I'm a small town girl. I've been trying to do this for so long, and there's a lot riding on this. A lot of people were counting on me. So just to go out there and to perform the way that I usually perform under that kind of pressure was really hard for me. And so when I left that audition, I didn't know if I made it or not. I got back to my hotel room and I called everybody I knew and I was like, I'm just happy I got through it. I did it. And, you know, if they like it, that's great. But if not, that's okay too, because this is a big, huge goal for me personally. And
So that was the executive callback. And then there was still yet another step before you're actually on TV screens.
Yes.
And is it one more step?
That was the last step to earning your way to the blind audition. So later that evening, after all the auditions were completed, they split us into three different groups. And one group went home, one group stayed for the next day to perform a third song because they kind of weren't sure. And then the other group was invited back to perform for the chairs. And so I was in the group that was invited back to perform for the chairs, which is kind of, there's kind of a funny story to that. They, you know, they split us into these groups and they put us all in one room. And the first person, you know, we're all waiting to hear. We're not really sure if we're in the right group or not. And there was one person that comes through the door after, you know, 10 minutes after we're supposed to be there for the meeting. They come in with a box of Kleenex, brand new box of Kleenex. They walk down the aisle, they put it on the table, and they open it up and then leave. So we're like, okay, are we in the good group or the bad group? Because I know it's got to be, it's one or the other.
Why are we crying?
Why are we? Yeah, happy tears, sad tears, we're not sure. And so, you know, as the story goes, we made it and everybody's hugging and, you know, I'm hugging strangers and, you know, tears are flying everywhere. And then they have a process of a psych eval to make sure that you have an okay personality to go through something like this, because it's emotionally straining and traumatic for some people, and which I completely understand. So the next few hours we took some tests and met with a counselor. And you know, they're very careful with you. That's something that I was really surprised to find out, is they're very concerned with you as a person. Not only are you able to handle something like this, but also they prepare you for one of the greatest performances of your life. You know, it's huge for people like me. You know, like I don't do stuff like this ever.
Right. It's cool. It's like they do a better job than maybe you would have expected of putting themselves in your shoes. I mean, what it is like for you to experience something like this, and also what it's like, both the good and the bad. And they are concerned. They want you to do well, and they don't want this to be more than you can handle.
Yes.
I mean, whether it goes well or whether it doesn't, I mean, it's a huge thing to experience.
Absolutely.
So then the audition or performance for the chairs, for those famous judges on the show, did that occur then, right then and there? I mean, like later that night, or was that down the road?
That was a few months. In October was the airing of the blind auditions. So we flew back and then to come back a couple months later.
To sing.
To prepare yourself for the 90 seconds. It's funny, we were out there for almost a whole month and to prepare for 90 seconds of a song. So, which again is like, they give us more than enough time to prepare for this. And they hook you up with a vocal coach, and they make sure that they give you, we went through some meetings to talk about things, to how to take care of yourself, what to do, you know, advice, what to do, things that you should take, like vitamins, and, you know, make sure you exercise and, you know, take care of your body and things like that. So, it was at the end of October that we were able to perform, and I was so ready to go by that time. So ready to go. So
let's have you explain to our listeners why you're talking about singing for the chairs. And it's one of the really distinctive features of this particular TV show called The Voice. I mean, TV's loaded with various kind of talent performance, audition kinds of performances, but nobody does it exactly the way they do it on The Voice. Explain the chairs and what it means to sing for the chairs.
Yes, so the chairs are turned around, so they can't see what you look like.
So when you are singing, you're actually looking at the back of four swiveling chairs.
Yes, these four chairs. You sing to a full audience, which was very helpful, because you didn't feel that alone and ostracized. but it was exhilarating. They had, you know, they do that. They pride themselves on that feature of the show, because they think that it's kind of unfair sometimes when people get judged for what they look like and may not be able to make it as far as they should have been, because they have such a phenomenal talent. It's kind of a hindrance, which it shouldn't be.
Right. You know, it reminds me of that dramatic moment when Susan Boyle, who many people have heard of. I remember comedian Bonnie Hunt did a really interesting, I don't even want to say it's a comedy routine because she was really being deadly serious, but she replayed on her program footage of Susan Boyle singing that first time she kind of burst on our sort of national consciousness. Mm-hmm. And you see this look of utter shock on the judges' faces. And the way Bonnie Hunt interpreted that, and so did I at the time, was this feeling of like, how can this be?
Yeah.
I mean, how could this beautiful voice possibly come from a person who doesn't look dazzlingly beautiful?
Right.
And there's just something so incredibly, first of all, offensive about that.
Sure.
And also something really stupid about that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
if anybody is seriously involved in working with musicians, you know that how pretty you are or handsome you are has nothing to do with what kind of voice you have.
That's
and it,
so true.
It just underscored the shallowness of that particular show or that scenario or something.
Right.
And of course, what you're describing is a scenario on The Voice where none of that should matter. You could walk out, you happen to be a beautiful woman, but you could have walked out and been wearing potato sack and hair and curlers, but you would have sung and that's what it was about.
Right.
It was about your singing, not the way you looked.
Yes.
And so you have this feature.
Yes.
So
very proud to be on a show that has that, that keeps that in mind.
Absolutely.
Sure.
So I think we have probably already sort of given away the fact that your singing was successful enough that some
Correct.
Chairs turned around.
Yep.
Explain exactly what happens in that moment.
Oh, well, I mean, it was, where do I begin? let me explain that there are 5 days of auditions. They set it up in 5 days. And I had... they have the first 3 days of the auditions, they have all day they book auditions. And then after the 3 days, there's 2 or 3 days of nothing. And then they have the last 2 days of auditions full all day from early in the morning to late in the evening. Well, I was scheduled for the third day. I was the very last contestant to audition, right? So I know that you understand this, that ears get really tired if you're listening, and they listen so hard. You could just tell by looking at them that it's work to listen so closely and to have, an idea of what you're looking for and the sound that you need to stack your team up the way that you want it stacked. It's a tough job. And so I got my slot and I'm like, oh no, they're going to be so tired. It's the end of the day. And on top of that, like I wake up and I'm like, I have to sit through the whole day just waiting for my chance. So, but I was happy to be booked the first 3 days. I think I would have went crazy if I had to, because I flew everybody home that was booked for the last 2 days. So I don't know that I would be okay just going back home and then coming back out. So I was happy. I was happy with my slot, but I was still a little nervous. So we wait the whole day. They call me to go on stage, and there's like a holding area where you just sit and you wait your turn. And there's these two doors, and for those of you who watch the show, you see the doors open and then the contestants walk through. That's the final moment that you have to yourself. And so, I was pacing back and forth. There was cameras there, and they asked me to hype it up a little bit. So I tried to, I think I even did like a little kick just because I'm like a physical, hype myself up. I got to move a little bit to get the jitters out. And so I did all that. And then I walked through, they call my name, the lights go out and the music starts. And that's when I just said to myself, there's no turning back. You do what you did last time. You do what you do every time you get up on the stage, and be true to who you are as a performer.
Hmm.
Feel it. Feel every second of it. And And I made a connection with two very important people, I think. So
evidently, because two chairs swiveled around.
Two really important people.
And we'll talk about in a little bit.
Yep.
Chantel Godlewski, I want to bring you into our conversation. I know that you were out in Los Angeles with Betsy for most of this. For the actual taping of this moment that she's describing right now, where were you?
They had us just kind of off to the back of the stage, like I guess you would say maybe stage left, which is funny. That's a thing with my friends. We always go stage left when we go to a show. So I just, you know, you get little superstition there. Once they separated Betsy from us, they took her one way and us another and put us in this little teeny tiny holding area. And then they bring you stage left and you see there's like a TV screen in front of you. And then you can see Betsy. Like we saw her come up and we could see her performance, but we couldn't see the judges. And we could see them on the TV, but there was a lag. So, like, when the first chair turned, we didn't know it happened. We saw her reaction to us, and we were all kind of sitting there like, what?
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, we saw it on the TV, and then we, you know, went crazy.
Yeah. So. I had the first chair turned, and I look over at them immediately while I'm singing, and they're like this. They're just frozen.
Yeah, we're just waiting.
Still waiting for something to happen. So,
and I started jumping because everybody started jumping, and I didn't actually see a chair turn till the second chair turn. So I didn't realize who was the first chair turn until it was all said and done. And so just because of that lag on the TV, because you couldn't see that. So,
And remind me, because I can't remember this. It's strange that I don't remember it, but does that chair turning happen during the singing?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I should think, a little disconcerting. I mean, it's great, but I mean, that's a really pressure cooker moment where you're singing and hoping that that happens. And then when it happens, in a sense, you can't be discombobulated by that. You have to keep singing, right?
Yes, yes.
The performance doesn't end at that moment when the chair swivels. Mm-hmm.
Right. And strangely enough, there, as a singer, your mind can go many different places while you're doing your performance. I remember a performance where I was like, I drifted off and thought about a list of, like, the laundry list of things I had to do after the show and, like, while I'm singing a song, you know, like, you slip in and out of it. But something to that magnitude, that type of performance, I remember myself being pretty focused on the songs.
And it was brief. I mean, the audition itself, as you said, was quite brief. It wasn't even the whole song, right? Or was it?
Yeah, they do a different version. They kind of cut it down to a song that makes sense, still has what they're looking for, you know, a place in the song that still pops and has the essence of the message. So they do a really good job, and the band is, oh, forget about it. They're professional. They pick up on stuff. They give you great ideas. You know, vocal exercises you could do. To really make your performance the best that it could be.
So that in and of itself makes this an exciting experience. I mean, no matter what the ultimate results are, just getting to make music with some first-rate people and to be heard by people who really know what they're talking about.
Yes, for sure.
Chantel, I'm curious. You obviously, I mean, you love Betsy, support Betsy, have, I'm sure, seen her sing, you know, any number of times. But I'm suspecting that you've never been exactly in this position before where you have needed to give her a kind of a different sort of encouragement and support. I mean, I'm pretty certain that she's never been through something quite so transformative and potentially wrenching and traumatic and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Just talk for a moment about, I don't want to paint it in negative terms, but I mean, that just seems like a real mantle of responsibility that I suspect you've had to feel to be whatever she needed you to be during this really challenging, exciting experience.
Well, I mean, actually, I've believed in her since the day I heard her sing. So a lot of it was just, to me, was the same, even though this is a completely different magnitude of, you know, level of where she's at. I just believe in her enough that I knew she deserved to be there. So, of course, there's the moments where things are hard to be home and she's, you know, off living another life for a month in L.A. But it didn't. You know, it didn't take but a second to remind yourself, like, this, she deserves this. And I knew she could do it. So to be supportive and encouraging to her, to me, was just every day. Like, that's just normal. And I think that's one thing about both of us, is she would be the same with me. And she has been in things in my life. So I don't think that there was much effort.
Right.
To have to give her support.
It felt completely natural
to assume that role.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
And this is probably as good a time as any to say it, because I know, Betsy, it's important that you want us to say this, that Chantel is a nurse.
Yes.
And that means a lot to you, that
absolutely.
The work she does is so important. And I suspect the life of nurses is not very easy. And so I'm sure you've had to be a support for her in a lot of different respects as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I tried. That's the thing with a partnership, is you kind of pick up the pieces that the other person can't seem to put together. And she went to school here at Gateway. And she, you know, there was a lot of nights where she had a lot of homework that she really suffered through. And I tried to be there. But she, you know, I feel the way about nurses as I do about teachers, is that they are the pillars of our community, and they really, we need them so much, and they're so sometimes underappreciated, most definitely underpaid. She's my rock star. Like, when I see her, when we were lucky enough to go to her hospital at St. Luke's in Aurora, in Milwaukee, a couple days ago, and I got to meet some of her coworkers, and I got to see, you know, what she sees every day. And I was lucky enough to sing for one of their favorite patients, and it was a touching day for us. And I'm so glad we did it. But she's been through a lot. I mean, just in life and, you know, pursuing a career in nursing, and she's kicking butt out there. Like, she really is. She's made for this kind of work, and so I'm lucky to have her.
So we have two rock stars in our WGTV studios today.
Buddy.
Yes. So Chantel Godlewski and her partner, girlfriend Betsy Aides, who just scored this tremendously exciting success on the TV show The Voice. And we're going to fill in a few more details and also hear a bit of backstory as well. But I think we're going to pause and just give people a chance to hear a little more of your singing. And I think you would especially appreciate if I play what I think is your favorite song, again, with your current band called Well-Known Strangers. And this is from a disc of five songs called Found. Mm-hmm. So tell our listeners just a little bit about this song called Aligned.
So this song, Aligned, was created, I think, after a few songs. We're kind of a new band, newer band. We started about 5 years ago, and Joe Adamick and I started writing songs together, and we noticed after, like, the third or fourth song that they're kind of, you know, a little dark and maybe a little disturbing. So we decided to write something a little lighter and a little more encouraging. The song is about finally getting to a place after a lot of heartache and a lot of work that you tried to do in an interpersonal relationship. You tried so many different things. It's kind of about letting go and understanding that, accepting and understanding that things aren't going to be any different, and to stop yourself and move on, move through it, and be your best person and learn from whatever experience you can make. And I just want to say that I'm really proud of this, that original song was learned, a fifth grade class at Curtis Strange Elementary at Curtis Range Elementary School in Kenosha, they learned that song and sang it for their fifth grade graduation. Is what I meant to say.
Fantastic. That's wonderful.
So I'm really proud of this tune, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. So again, it's Aligned. So this is Well-Known Strangers, and their lead singer is Betsy Aides. That was the song Aligned, sung by, performed by Well-Known Strangers and lead singer Betsy Aide. And Betsy Aide is my guest on the morning show, along with her partner, Chantel Godlewski. And for those of you just joining us, we are talking about Betsy's wonderful success on the TV show The Voice. And I'm sure many of you saw or at least have heard about that dramatic moment when two chairs spun around. Two of the judges were anxious to move her on further into the competition. So tell our listeners about those two famous musicians who each were so impressed with what you had to deliver in that audition.
Sure. I get the shivers just hearing you say it over again. So the first chair turn was John Legend. He's a singer-songwriter. I'm sure everybody around here knows who he is. He's got an EGOT, which is all of the prestigious awards that you can
Emmy,
possibly...
Grammy, and Oscar, and Tony.
That's right. They did a really cute promo video or a couple promos showing how nervous the rest of the coaches were to have John Legend on the show because of the EGOT and, so that was amazing. So he was the first to turn. And then the second person to turn was Adam Levine from Maroon 5. And I had been a fan of Maroon 5, I guess, since they were popular, their first album. I've been listening to them. It's funny, I came across a video of Talon and I, my son and I, we do this thing where it's called dance fighting, and he would get up on top of the bed and we would just kind of wrestle, you know, with each other. And I came across a video of us dance fighting to an Adam Levine song. And so I wanted to send that to the producers. Maybe they'll use that.
Fun.
But it was kind of cute. Yeah. So I was so happy. So happy to have at least one. And, you know, two is just a cherry on top.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so as I think people maybe read in the newspaper articles, you actually then get to have a choice when there are two judges who, in a sense, want to take a chance on you or want to send you forward. So explain what that choice is all about.
Oh, well, I think mainly it's either your favorite artist that, you know, you've always wanted to work with, or, you know, you're someone who you know is going to be good for your voice. And I can't tell you really what was going through my brain. I know that there was two really big reasons why I chose John Legend. One of them was my son is a huge fan and has been a huge fan for years of John Legend. So I knew that it was a possibility that he would be able to meet him and the rest of my family. And then the other reason was he was the first chair to turn. So in a matter of a second, he changed my life. And I'm not sure that Adam would have if he didn't. You know, maybe he did it because, okay, if John's getting, I'm gonna get in there because he's so competitive. Adam Levine is so competitive, like that. Either one of them, all of the judges are just amazing. And I was able to work with John, and it's been amazing.
Wow, and so how much of that has already happened? I mean, have you already had the chance to sit down with him and be coached by him?
Yes, there were two rehearsals that we were able to work with him and then the band, and also our fantastic vocal coach, Trelawney. She's just amazing. It's just to be around the people that have been doing this for so long with so many different fantastic artists. I just feel like really lucky. So
I think some young musicians, when they're presented with that opportunity, I mean, apart from the whole thing of working with somebody famous, which I think anybody would be eager to do, but I think there are plenty of young musicians who would be worried that someone is trying to change them into something else. And it sounds like this has not been that experience at all for you, and that you've welcomed everything that they've done for you in that respect. What kinds of things have they told you, or in what sorts of things have you been working on together with John Legend and these other coaches?
Okay, well, for example, I hit a very high note in my blind audition, and that is about a whole step higher than my normal range in my chest voice. So you, you kind of have two different voices. One is your chest voice where you just kind of belt stuff out, and one is your head voice where, you know, you can get a little higher, but it's a lot thinner and, you know, a little lighter. So my chest voice was, my limit was a whole step under what the note that I hit on stage. Well, when I went out to L.A., I used probably 2.5 weeks of vocal coaching and exercises just to hit that note. So I knew the song. I was very confident in from start to finish, but that one note was really difficult for me to work at. And I talked with my, my vocal coach, Trelawney. I was like, do we have enough time? And she's like, of course. The voice is like a muscle and blah, 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 blah. And she just went off. And she knew exactly what to give me to figure it out. And, you know, I can still hit it. It's not something that, that goes away. And so it improved me as a performer with my confidence and just the skill in itself. Like I've grown so much since the blind auditions.
Right.
So, and working with John is, he seems to be the coach. He's very smooth, very chill. But he doesn't seem to want to stray from, want you to stray from your style. So the advice he gave was great, but it was limited, because I think that he wanted you to kind of just do what you do and then develop that way with a very little advice that, that we were given.
So in other words, he wants you to do what you do and maybe just do it a little better, or maybe a, a little more assurance, or but not change you into
else. He really, he picked us for a reason, and I think that that showed with working him so with working with him so far.
So explain to our listeners what is next for you and this TV show.
Well, I can't really say what's next right now. What I can say is there's another whole slew of blind, or not blind auditions, but the battles. So the battle round is after the blind auditions. And what happens in the battle round is each team has 12 contestants. And now in the battle rounds, there will be two contestants singing the same song in each team. So I will be singing with a contestant that is also on Team Legend. And then John will pick the winner of that of that round. But there's also steals and saves that they implement. So if I win, I get to still be on John's team. If I lose, there's a possibility that a that another coach could steal me, and I'd still be in the competition. So that's makes it really exciting.
Right.
Or you go home.
Now,
or you go home, yeah.
Right. Now, and explain, are we talking about something that's already happened but you can't tell us, or are we talking about something that has yet to happen?
It's already happened.
Right. So, which I kind of knew, but I just wanted to make sure that was clear to our listeners. Talk for a moment about, and Chantel, please join in, what it is like to experience something so exciting, but to not be able to really talk about it freely with, you know, all of the people that care about you and so on. And what has this been like for your 10-year-old son, Talon? I mean, most 10-year-olds I know are not champion secret keepers, but apparently he is.
He is. He is, and he was. We're just so proud of him for doing this. He's even made sure that we aren't saying too much to people. He'd be very concerned. He'd be very concerned if we start talking about it and there's other people close by or in the next room that could overhear what we're saying, or if I'm on the phone with someone and I said something and he would be like, who are you talking to? I don't think you should have said that, because they might think this, and then they might tell this person.
Wow.
So
he's loyal.
And, and he knew Betsy did a great job explaining, as she always does, of what could happen if the wrong person hears information they shouldn't and it gets out there, she could be disqualified. And because of his love and support of her, he was, and he's her little protector. So he's very much followed the rules of don't say too much. And he becomes very, he likes his details. So he'll ask us, okay, well, if I say this, can I say this? And then you're like, no. So he likes examples. So he knows how far he can go. But mm-hmm. he was so cute in LA. You know, I explained to him, listen, we're going to be in this hotel and there's going to be all these people around. We don't know who's who. So we have to really be careful what we're talking to each other about mm-hmm. in the elevator or in the lobby or in the gym. And one day we got on the elevator and there was another contestant's family. And the stepmother of the contestant says hello to us. And she's like, how's Betsy feeling? And Talon's eyes got so big and he looked at me like, she shouldn't be saying her name. We don't know who's around. Because there were other people in the elevator. We didn't know who they were. And I just, you know, I just said, she's doing well. And I left it at that. We got off the elevator and he grabs me to pull me by him so he could whisper in my ear because he still didn't want anybody to hear. And he's like, she's not supposed to be talking about mom. And he was so worried that somebody would hear. It was so cute. So he is like.
So he's the last person we have to worry about.
He is.
Instead of blowing this
secret. He has done amazing. Yeah. He's amazing.
Well, that's just great, and it certainly says a lot about your relationship and how important this has been mm-hmm. to him.
Yes.
We don't have a whole lot of time to talk about this, unfortunately, but I think it's important, Betsy, for our listeners to know that this is a long time coming for you in that you have been, on top of being a substitute teacher and single mom, you have really been anxious to make a really powerful statement as a professional musician.
Yes.
Just tell us a little bit about this journey.
Okay. Well, a while back, a very while, we won't say how long ago. I suppose my love of singing came from watching my brother become a lead singer to a band. He was in choirs in high school and things like that, and I got into choir because I saw what he had done. But after high school, a little bit through college, he was in a band called The Other Side, and I really wanted to try it out, and it just looked really cool to me. You know, that's the word that I just think of, like, it looks cool, let's try it, let's do it. So I became the backup vocalist for his band, and then we kind of transitioned into me being the lead singer, and the band changed to Rainy Day Crush, and we kind of toured a little bit. And when, you know, I did my first show as the lead singer at the Bratstop.
Ah.
And after that show, I was like, I'm going to do this forever. As long, I love being up here. Like, this is, and I'm kind of an introvert, or I've grown up as an introvert. And I'm a little reserved, but being on stage, like, it's my release, it's my moment, it's my time to get out all of this stuff that I hold in. So it's therapeutic for me to be up there, and that feeling has not gone away since.
Wow.
But it was tough. I had to put it away for a while as Talon was young. And I just kind of got back on the horse gradually, little by little, doing as much as I can when I can do it, finding the time, because I knew that it was important. So,
right. And, of course, you've been blessed to be part of this group, Well-Known Strangers, that obviously have been a really inspiring set of collaborators for you. And
absolutely.
They must be incredibly excited about this for you.
Yes, they've been nothing but supportive. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of scary because we're not really allowed, we're kind of bound by contract to put the recording, and we have to have our performances approved. So that takes a little longer in, as far as like booking things. So they've
you mean
sacrificed.
Like right now.
Right now,
mm-hmm.
yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they've sacrificed a lot for me, but they're my cheerleaders. They've, you know, I couldn't ask for a more loving group of individuals to come along this ride with me. They can't wait to see what happens, and I hope this really gives us the opportunity to do what we've we've been wanting to do for a really long time. So,
well, it's an amazing story, and I'm so grateful to both of you for coming into our studios to share it and to give us a chance to ask you some questions about this wild ride. And once it all finishes up, we hope we can have you back to kind of finish the story for us and tell it to us from your own perspective. But in the meantime, we'll be in front of our TV screens following very closely the story of Betsy Aide. And Chantel Godlewski, I'm glad you were with us as well.
Thank you.
And thank you for being part of the morning show.
Thank you. And we've been listening to your voice, you and Dave McGrath, for years and years and years. So we really enjoy the stories that you've brought into our home. So thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much.
Best of luck to Betsy Aide on The Voice as she moves on. 8:59. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway grads.